Anywho, you know what we do have time for? Leanna Squatch. You know what we have time for? I bet I do too. There we go.
There we go. 7-7. This is the right
thing. Make Me Smart open theme music, The Informant. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. I bet y'all didn't know, by the way, maybe you did, that our theme music has a title and a name and everything. It's called The Informant. That's what my rundown says.
That's us. Not in the snitches get stitches way, but in the inform you way.
Oh, man. Wow. Okay.
Oh, I'm Molly Wood. Yes. In case you're new here, thanks for joining us. It is, and this is, you know, it's why it's very important or relevant to bring up the name of our theme song, The Informant, because it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, the day in the week where you ask us questions, our producers do the work to inform you, along with sometimes stuff that we also have floating around in our brains. So gentle reminder, if you have questions, we will take them almost any day of the week and compile them on a Wednesday. Email those to us, makemesmart@marketplace.org in written or audio form.
We need your questions. That's the only way What Do You Want to Know Wednesday works.
We definitely do.
Totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. You bet.
All right. So, the first, start today. Actually, all our questions today are emails.
Yes.
Andy in Stockton.
Emails. That's all right.
Andy in Stockton evidently sent us multiple questions, which I love. We have chosen this one about labor shortages. He says, hey, is part of the problem. I want to see all the other questions, by the way. I would like to just
see
those in Slack because I'm kind of curious. Like, Andy sent us a book. So with respect to the thing where companies are having trouble hiring, Andy writes, is part of the problem that businesses seem to have recruiting workers is that tied to lower numbers of immigrants. Also, he says, is a more morbid aspect the fact that we literally lost part of the workforce to COVID. Add to them the substantial number of people dealing with disability from long COVID. Is that enough to have an effect?
There's a lot in there, much as there was lots in your voluminous question book that you sent us. So a couple of high-level things, right? Because you can get into the labor force like 19 different ways from Sunday. And let me take the second and third parts first. We did literally lose part of the workforce to COVID. We did not, however, statistically lose enough of it to make a difference, which is a horrible thing to say because 600 and something thousand people are dead, 115-ish thousand of them of working age. And that's a huge loss and a tragedy. But if you're watching the labor market, that's not really the huge impact. Are there people suffering long-term disability from long COVID? Yes. Also, not enough of them to make a difference in workforce participation, which is really what you're talking about. Now, lower numbers of immigrants? Yes. We spent 4 years with an administration that tried and in many ways succeeded in tamping down immigration into this economy on both levels. Number one, illegal immigration, right? But also number two, legal immigration, right? The Trump administration worked really hard to discourage legal immigrants from coming here. Visa issuance was down. So the short answer to your question is yes, but in the grand scheme of things, percentage-wise, not a huge difference. I mean, look, the American labor force is 160-ish million people. So even if you lose a million through immigration, it's not, and this sounds terrible and I sound like a jerk and I apologize, it's not that huge of an impact.
Well, I think the point is, for one thing, you don't sound like a jerk. It's math. It's just math.
All right, well,
it is
heartless, maybe.
It is not nothing. And it, on top of all of the other things, this is sort of a, you know, death by a thousand tiny cuts thing. So you have some workforce reduction as a result of less immigration. And then you have on top of that all of these other economic factors, such as a lot of people taking early retirement, saying, I'm done, right? This was a really hard year. And some of that was enabled by the soaring stock market, the soaring home values that made it easier for some people to leave the workforce early, unlike previous recessions. There is, of course, too, there's just this sort of ongoing part of the still existing pandemic. Like, there are plenty of people who aren't going back to work because they're afraid to go back to work and get COVID, or they have young children at home who aren't vaccinated yet and they don't want to get them sick. There's still the part where people are saying, hey, turns out wages are really low historically. And also, if you want me to come back and risk getting sick with COVID or giving it to my kid or my elderly relative, you know, all of that. And so workers are saying, we have more bargaining power. We're not eager to rush back to these crappy jobs. We're reevaluating our lives. So when you add up all of those things is when you really, really start to see a substantial impact.
Totally. I think that reevaluating thing is really interesting and important, and that's going to be one of the long-term effects coming out of this thing. I also think, by the way, just from my own personal style manual, I'm not saying anymore, if I have in the recent past, I apologize because I shouldn't. I'm not saying anymore post-pandemic because we ain't.
Right.
You know?
Totally.
We're just not.
Yep.
We're just not. Nope. And there's going to be another wave and Delta this and wintertime that, and we're not post-pandemic and we should stop thinking that way.
We're mid to late at best.
Mid to late.
Let's say.
That's right.
Globally.
That's right.
You know?
Yep.
And certainly in the United States, we may be late stage, but we are still very much at risk because there's more than 30% of the population with no vaccine. None, not a single shot. Yeah.
Anne in Philadelphia wants to know this. Here's her email. Could you make me smart about private equity groups and hedge funds in relation to the current housing market? Are more homes being sold for the purposes of investment rental than to actual families? So, kind of yes, but not really. Current market share for private equity firms, and this is from Vox via Grace, our spectacular intern, and Bridget, because Marissa's off today. Current market share, Vox says, is about 20% of home sales are private equity groups or hedge funds. Peak of their market share was back in 2013, 30%. But look, that percentage is anybody not buying a house for their own primary residence, which we have covered on Marketplace. Primary residence, of course, is the important one because you could buy a second home. And if you're a regular person, that's okay. But it doesn't count in the flipping statistics, all that stuff. But look, lots of big investment firms have huge holdings, right? 20% of the American housing market is a ginormous dollar amount, right? And they can buy in cash. They get cheaper money, right? You borrow bazoodles of money, you pay cheap money. And also, they've got algorithmic and forecasting tools that ain't you and me looking for a new house. So there are structural advantages to those big buyers that is distorting the market, you know?
And a lot of the time, what they're buying is the houses with the most appreciation value, aka starter homes. Like quite specifically, homes that otherwise would be affordable to, you know, young people trying to get into the housing market for the first time, or people who have been shut out of the housing market who are trying to get into a less expensive home. And so it is, you know, while it may be 20% of the overall single family housing market, that's super significant. And I think we can see is obviously having a distorting effect. And in a lot of cases, these investors then are converting those houses to rentals.
Yep.
So you just have people who can't. I mean, I want to do a whole episode on this. I think it's fascinating. I'm sort of surprised it's legal on an ongoing basis. Yeah. But I guess it's just commerce, capitalism. Right? You can buy and sell whatever you want. It is capitalism, but it's a difficult trend as long as there aren't other ways, in this country at least, to amass wealth.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. All right, David in the Bay Area. I'm laughing because our fireworks situation has been bananas. And David in the Bay Area had a question about the supply chain for fireworks, which is like, how come we didn't just shut that off too? No, that's not his question. David writes, in the aftermath of the 4th of July celebration, I'm wondering how we can solve the supply chain issues we've been having. They've obviously been able to ship fireworks, I assume he means, to the East Bay region throughout the pandemic, up and to and through the 4th. Because they went all day, every day from May until yesterday. He didn't write this. I'm paraphrasing. Anyway, he says, how are they able to do this?
Yeah. So just very quickly before we dig into the answer on this one. So, you know, it's really funny. On Monday morning, which is was the 5th, it was the observed holiday after the 4th of July. I woke up, I was walking the dog, and the air in Los Angeles was just terrible. It was smoky and brown and disgusting. And I said on Twitter, I said, ah, yes, the 5th of July, that day when the entire Los Angeles basin disappears under the haze of fireworks smoke. And so some person responded to me on Twitter and said, but you said you were half full on fireworks the other day. What's up?
I know.
And I'm like, well, I am, but no, man. Yeah.
Life is all about internal inconsistencies. And while love the fireworks, it is totally true that they got to be kind of a frickin' nightmare. Too much of anything is a bad thing.
That's right.
And There was.
That's right.
Despite reports that there was indeed some kind of manufacturing delay and supply chain bottleneck and fireworks were more expensive and whatever, that definitely did not seem to be an issue here. Did you just kill a fly?
No.
What's going on? Are you okay?
I dropped the little thing I play with when I'm talking to you on the microphone box. So professional fireworks, they carried over their supplies from last year because a lot of those were canceled, right? So that doesn't count. Supply of fireworks,
too,
though.
This year.
I know. Supply of fireworks down 30%. Manufacturing delays, supply chain bottlenecks. You've heard that about other stuff in this economy. Costs, the Wall Street Journal reports, were up 25% from a year ago. Here's just an amazing little factoid that I honestly thought would have been bigger. In 2020, fireworks sales revenue was almost $2 billion last year, $1 billion in 2019. So it doubled in the space of a year, which is just kind of wild. Also, wow. Have to say that in a lot of places, fireworks are illegal, right? So we're not tracking a lot of these shipments. And you have to look no farther than that horrible disaster that we had here in LA, where the Los Angeles Police Department basically, I chuckled, but it's terrible, blew up part of a neighborhood when it was trying to confiscate 5,000 pounds of illegal fireworks.
Wow.
Which was just terrible. Oh, it was terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, so, wow. I feel like I sort of missed that in all of the various travels and news. Yeah, I mean, you ask a really interesting question, David, because indeed, officially speaking, there were supply chain bottlenecks. But I do have to wonder if some of these municipalities that canceled their, fireworks shows didn't then just ship the fireworks right out the back. Because, I mean, the Bay Area that you're talking about and other cities, Los Angeles, and I assume others across, I mean, it sounds like certainly others across the country. I mean, we had, Disneyland-level fireworks at street level across from north to south, up and down the bay and multiple cities. There was certainly zero sign of a supply chain bottleneck in some cities, which I think is hard to explain.
I actually had a little too much to drink on Sunday night. Didn't hear many of the fireworks. Kind of just fell right asleep.
Just saying. Well done, sir.
Just saying.
Well done.
There you go. All right. One last quickie.
Honestly,
it's very
kind of same.
Yeah. I mean, I was just out. I was like, what?
I'm a good sleeper.
Gotta go. Yeah. All right. So here's Margo, and here's what she wants to know. And I'm not sure, even though breaking the fourth wall, Bridget pinged me and Molly on Slack about 3-4 hours ago and said, hey, can you guys answer this one? And before I could say, nah, too fuzzy, Molly said, sure, we can do that. So here's the question. Hi, Kai and Molly. This is from Margo. She says, it's all right. In light of the patriotic festivities of the long weekend, I ask, what do you think America does well? That is, from a socioeconomic and political and even cultural perspective of the nation. Not like, oh, we're just a friendly bunch, of course. I'm kind of scratching my head about it, she says, so would love your thoughts. Thanks for this amazing show. She listens religiously. So I'm going to let you go first.
So here's what, the reason that I was like, we should try to answer this question is because I have a lot of conversations with my son about America, as you might imagine, because teenagers. And the Gen Z is experimenting with all kinds of different political beliefs and trying to figure out what they believe and, what countries should be or shouldn't be. And in the course of one of these conversations, I said to him, there's obviously a lot of things America doesn't do well. But truly, even though it is not evenly distributed, we do opportunity well. We do innovation well. We do entrepreneurship well. Like, you only have to take this sounds like a cliche, but I really mean it. You only have to take a ride in an Uber with a recent immigrant to understand that there is a reason that so many people still, to this day, want to come to America. That there is, that we can say whatever we want about our government without being arrested. Right? Like, again, this is not evenly distributed. There are certain administrations who will treat protesters poorly. But at the end of the day, they will also be able to sue because we have a constitution that defends our right to say what we want about our government. We do truly at least offer the promise of work and success, even if it's not always realized. And I actually think that there is value there. And when a kid says to you, well, I don't know, I mean, it seems like all the biggest companies in the world are from here. Maybe that's not always a good thing, as we're seeing, but it's also, it's a thing we do. It's a thing we do well. Promise.
So I'll tell you what, I don't have an answer that I'm satisfied with. So let's quote the former boss lady of Marketplace. Let's put a pin in this one, and we'll revisit.
Yeah.
After I've thought of it, because look, it's a really good question, in a deep and meaningful way, at a time when America is divided and things seem honestly a little perilous, which we've talked about. Molly and I have both, just even last Friday. So let's figure out a way to come back to this, because I don't have the answer that I'm satisfied with yet. I will eventually.
I like that. I and also, please, okay. You all listening, tell us. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Yeah. What do you think? Something? Yeah, nothing? Anything?
Yep.
Bring it on.
Yep. We should do that. All right. So there we end. What do you want to know Wednesday? Back tomorrow. Send us your questions, please. Emails, voice memos. We'll take them both. We can read. We can do emails. Make me smart at marketplace.org. And let's hit it.
I appreciate you saying that, since it was somewhat questionable up at the top there. I really put the emphasis in the wrong syllable. Make Me Smart was produced today by our intern, Grace Rubin, the fire, and by our senior producer, Bridget Bodner, who was like, why did anyone let Marissa Cabrera go on vacation? That was a terrible mistake. Bridget, come on, you guys. Grace and Bridget, you crushed it. Today's program was engineered by Liana Scolacci.
Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez did our theme music. We are back tomorrow. And there we go. Have the rest of your afternoon, Ben. Or evening, or morning, depending on when you listen to this. You know? That's fine, too.
Yeah.
That's fine, too.
That's fine, too.
There you go. It's all fine.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.